leaders work together, as Thomas showed, and the groups. Thank you very much. We had roughly seven people in my group, and Ellen was very modest, saying she should take her name off, but she did contribute, and I think that everybody did what they could and on volunteer time. What I'd like to do today is talk a little bit about a couple things. Our group had the fun of getting to start off the team discussions. We are charged with defining, or at least starting the discussion, as to how to define and measure the sustainable transportation network. Part of this effort was also intended to provide the framework for the other teams to work from, so we had some common reference points. That was particularly useful in our discussions to come up with metrics that met multiple goals. So I'm going to spend a lot of time talking about that before we get to where we hope to start measuring things. First of all, what is a metric, or what is a network? As we see from some of Bill Lieberman's work, it's not just a series of lines or streets or strands. It's not even ones that weave across each other or connect. What distinguishes a network from a grid or a weave is that it connects things. And I think this is important because it distinguishes some of the work that we do well, I think, that is very different indeed from other types of structures. So we're going to start this off. This does not mean this is the final definitive. This is just a starting point for discussion. We're going to start with a network being a structure that serves and connects multiple nodes, people, flows, and or functions to achieve a goal. This is kind of an important part, I think. And as we go back to the diagram or the table that Thomas showed yesterday, we just added one thing to it. And Fred mentioned it in his discussion yesterday as well, and I think Jackie did as well, that the difference in this continuum, it's not like black and white. There's bad conventional network and good sustainable transportation network. It's more of a continuum. It's sort of that towards an architecture, it's towards a better system, because we're constantly improving and making places better. But the key fundamental difference is our intent. And the first line we've added, which is a sustainable transportation network, is distinguished from the conventional network, which is about moving cars at speed. Sustainable transportation network, as I'm going to call it STN because I can't say it. I'm having Jackie's problem today. It's about places and getting to them. The transportation network is not just about transportation. It's about places and getting good services and people to them. People get this. The problem really is the transportation planners and engineers. We did a public process, and Fred did something similar, and it's been done all over the country. People understand places. They really get that, and they understand that places are the places people want to get to, and in a eight-county region around the Indianapolis area, they were able to identify the places to serve, and they were able to identify as well these corridors of these alignments to connect them. And they got that. They said, whatever the connection is, it doesn't have to be cars, but these places need to be connected. And they came up with it. And they also came up with these different types of places and how those places work together and work as an individual location with a network all its own. Kind of like Norm's diagrams where he showed those different patterns. Well, we're going to look at how this blows up into each of these places. What do they consist of? Well, to take from Doug Farr, they consist of a place that has an edge and a center. And there's some confusion about nodes being used as the term, but I think that for now we're going to talk about this. There's a center and there's an edge. And if you have a big district, you probably want to break it up. Why? Because places are walkable places. We've all seen non-places. We've all read books from Kunstler and others that if you don't have a place, you can have all kinds of transportation going through it, but it doesn't mean anything. It doesn't have any rallying point, etc. And they end up making places later by having to rebuild the entire place. So we're going to take as the building block, and again, this is just a start a starting point that all our places must be walkable, and if it's too big to be walkable from edge to edge, we can break it down into smaller districts, walkable districts, which are, lo and behold, neighborhoods. So if we start talking about these neighborhoods, now we start to see the relationship between these places with their land use and utilities and the network of streets and modes, etc., that connect to them. We will again look at a couple things, and I'm going to talk more about them in just a second, but you have these districts, and you have a grid that kind of relates to them. You have a center, and you have these sort of quarters that relate to this center. And we're going to come right back to that, but let me go on and talk about these districts are multimodal places with nodes at their center. Getting back to that concept, whatever that walkable distance is, it could be half mile, could be a quarter mile radius, could be a mile radius, depending on your place, but it needs to be something that people agree with. The center is the heart of the district. You cluster many destinations, goods, and services at these centers, at these nodes. And these all are also hubs. They're walkable, bikeable, transit. How about park once? We talked about that. Nelson Nygaard does a lot of work on that, and I think they're right on, and so did our group. Unique places based on heritage and culture, something that can mean something now as opposed to those nowhere places that Kunstler talks about. Okay, so now how do we connect them? I'm getting back to this network of, we'll call them corridors. You have through corridors, which are, there's going to be a need to travel at a little bit more speed. But why do we need to run them right through the places where we live? Our districts, our places, do not need to be divided by a high-speed arterial. We'll call these through corridors. And we have at the centers, these are the places we want to get to. Not through, to. And those are place-making corridors, and they house the node. They house the things we want to get to. And then we have connector corridors that combine them, and they each have different characteristics. And lo and behold, when we do this, we kind of discover that this is the way we used to build. And, in fact, this happens to be the actual built pattern of Indianapolis. And the older districts had this kind of structure. And we notice two things here. Not only do we notice the districts and their walkability, and they may have a different scale. This one had a quarter-mile radius. The central business district had a half-mile radius. But we also notice that there's an intensity difference ranging from center all the way out of these sub-districts, and also from the center of the district to the edge. So each of these could have a different pattern. They could be a different type of district, but they're all walkable. They're all multimodal. They all have characteristics that meet all the things, but they don't have to be the same. They can be very different, and I think we all agree on this. But we can also determine or see these different characteristics. You might have a central business district type. You might have a village mixed use type. And you may have more of a village residential district in which the principal object of that district is residential, but it still needs to have those elements that we all value. So that is an intensity gradient that we see, we recognize, we know, we love. Didn't invent this. Obviously, we've all seen this. Again, lo and behold, intensity of uses. Imagine that. But there's also this complexity from each of these places. So not just a continuum from the center business district, and you wind out going through this perfect transition from T6 out into the rural hinterland. It doesn't necessarily always work that way, but it's composed of these elements also. Place by place. So each of these places has that little mini transect within it. It may not go all the way to rural, but they still have that same relationship, and it's still important. And each of these places has multiple layers that work so well. As we discovered with the emergency responders, we noticed that these layers, when we do them right, when we make our places right, everything starts to fit into place. We start off with the lowest level, which is the sort of what we're given, which is the green infrastructure. And as we were doing this for Indianapolis, coincidentally, we started noticing that the old cooling network of streets before they had air conditioning all worked this way as well, kind of the build with nature. Sound familiar? And It wasn't antithetical to our building at all. Then we have the road structure level, which is something we're all familiar with, in which you have to provide goods, services out to all the individual domiciles, the pizza delivery, for instance, or whatever, utilities. And the emergency response needs to get to every place. But there's a level that we often lost in conventional planning, which is this economic land use structure level. And that land use structure level is something that where everything is accessible from that district. So your corner or neighborhood store, etc. Also, where do you go to pick up the bus? How do you connect with the larger network of modes? And how do you connect with things like a bike share? If you don't do it by place, then you have to have a bike every two blocks or so, and there's no rhyme or reason. Whereas everybody knows where the center of these districts are. It's the way we used to. And it's something that Lawrence mentioned earlier I also think is really key, and it comes from something that Rick Hall mentioned in Austin. It is these places have to be able to evolve. And if you find a good place, this place doesn't need, as soon as time passes, to be wiped off the face of the earth and rebuilt outside of town. In fact, these things grow and evolve and have the ability to do so because they're well-built and they take into account time, which is that sustainable thing that I think that Norman Garrick talked about very well. So what we're really kind of theorizing about is perhaps a new functional classification that's based on place. And this may be a place we want to go in which we have different characteristics for different types of thoroughfares and different types of corridors, different modes that might belong there, different speed regimes, different land use intensity, and different cross traffic intensities, etc. I won't go into too much detail, but how do these look? We've all seen these types of diagrams before. At the center, you have your placemaking, you have all modes catered to, but who should be first? Perhaps you want to say, you know, hey, this is the place where pedestrians should rule. Yeah, you might have seen the comic strip where the car has to get up and push a button to gain to be allowed to pass across the intersection. And then you might have some. This really starts to cross into what we talked about in the context-sensitive solutions book. But I think quickly, just to give us a visual image of what these might look like at the edge. Of districts, we might be able to allow more of a parkway, which allow for longer distance travel, like distance buses, but they shouldn't preclude the ability for other things to happen and these cross-connectivity. But it does have a kind of a different character and personality. And then the connection between the two. And then as soon as we get back to the little residential quarters, lo and behold, the pedestrian, you know, Junior should be allowed to run into the street after his ball without being mowed over by a 45-mile-per-hour vehicle. So, a lot of preface to start talking then about the framework for how we hope to all work and measure and define what we're trying to achieve. We have different scales. This comes from the canons. We have the region, the neighborhood, and the block street. These are all places of different scale, and this is sort of the context of the network in place. We have how do we connect them? And we talk about walking, biking, transit, which is the arterial for walking and biking. But we can't throw out the automobile, as tempting as that might be. We can't throw out freight, because if you're going to service your places, they have to be able to get stuff to them, and that's something we can't forget. Emergency response, how about green networks? Your green connectivity for many reasons. This is the subject of the network and modes kind of group. Then, you know, it's great once we define this, but how do we make it happen? That perhaps is the most difficult task, and thank goodness that's not my group. The network and implementation group, which really has perhaps some of these elements of time. How do we get these places to actually happen? And then once you guys do all that hard work, then you hopefully be very generous and give us what we need to do to help bring this overarching sense of place basis for these sustainable, truly sustainable networks together to give us something to see. Well, how have we done? Is this work? Does this help do the things that we really want to be? So this is really now then the part of the measuring part, and the last slide I have is talking about measuring. And there are three different levels, and I think we often confuse those. So I want, as a point of departure, our group really wanted to talk about, well, what is it that we optimize? And we've all criticized, rightly so, level of service. If that is what you're optimizing, what are you going to end up with? You're going to end up with wider streets, faster traffic, etc. It is a bad optimizing parameter. So, in fact, we have to start thinking about what it is we're trying to do with each of these parameters or these measurements that we may come up with. There's optimizing, which is what you design to. Then you stand back one step and say, well, let's assess. And then you verify other things that might be pertinent, perhaps safety, perhaps environmental performance, etc. So there are different kinds of possible metrics for each of these. You might talk about optimizing as time to destination, connectivity and spacing, continuity and convergence. These types of measures, and these are just first glance ones, and we hope we'll talk about that today, of what might be the ideal thing to optimize. Then we assess, you know, is this a good environmental quality? Is this a good pedestrian route directness? Maybe then we start talking about modal level of service, in which we're saying, well, if we have a placemaking street, perhaps level of service D is good, because that means people want to be there. Then finally we have verifying and sustaining, checking against other things. Is this violate social equity considerations? Does this violate some of the safety? Does this violate anything from the triple bottom line, which we talked about, which Norm, I think, started to talk about, environmental, social, and economic? If we don't tie this to economics, are we going to be able to sell this to the people who really make those decisions? And that brings in sort of one posited overarching parameter over time. It may be a little bit far for us to go today, but the notion of generative capacity, which is sort of the return on investment for making this network happen. And that's all I have. Thank you. I'll be glad to field questions after the other people stand up. Thank you.